Are you tired of losing the money game, consumer debt weighing you down, over premium and underinsured, income not enough? I'm Jake Robinson, your money and business coach. Listen to Roy Matlock Jr. every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. as we discuss solutions to these and more.
W263 AI Murfreesboro. W270 AF Murfreesboro.
WGNS Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
News time right now, 8:11. You're tuned in to WGNS on this Friday morning, today, December 27th. Our guest today in studio is Middle Point Landfill General Manager Jeremy Jernigan. How are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. This is one of those times of the year where people are not only receiving Christmas gifts and they have tons of extra everything from paper to cardboard boxes, but they're also cleaning out their house, I know, to get ready for the new year as well. So do you see this as a big concern at the end of each year, you know, for more trash to be dumped off?
Yes, it's something we battle with every year. During the holiday season, we see almost a 25% increase in household waste during the holidays. And a lot of that can be recycled. A lot of folks don't know that, but that's kind of what we're here this morning to encourage folks to take those opportunities and recycle as much as possible and keep those items out of the landfill.
It's pretty wild, a 25% increase in household trash just because of the holidays and gift giving and all of that. That's wild. And I don't know how you go about calculating that each year, but man, that's a big increase.
It is a big increase, but you think about the amount of gifts folks get, folks coming over for different meals, just a lot of different things that add up over time, and before you know it, you're 2 days away from trash pickup and your trash bin's full.
Yeah, now I know here in Rutherford County, of course, we have the city of Murfreesboro that picks up trash at, you know, each person's address, but then we also have private companies out there picking up in the county, picking up in Smyrna, Laverne, I mean, all over. So how many different trash, I guess, companies come and dump at the Middle Point?
Well, there's a number of local haulers in the area that do dump, and a lot of the material from some of the private haulers will end back up in Nashville. Just depends on which company it is. But all of the city of Murfreesboro trash comes to Middle Point. Everything that obviously Republic picks up comes to Middle Point. At that point, it's up to the local haulers to contract different disposal sites.
And, of course, that's, you know, whenever somebody who lives outside the city limits of Murfreesboro, whenever they have to pay that monthly service fee or quarterly, however that works for their trash pickup, they're paying for not only the service of getting their trash picked up with that private company, but they're also paying disposal fees, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All of that will be wrapped up in their monthly fee. It'll cover the different companies' labor, truck costs, disposal fees, different things like that.
So can anybody go out there to Middle Point to dump their trash? And if so, how do they charge?
We do. We have a separate area. Not everyone has to go back to the back. We have containers set up front on an asphalt parking lot, so we don't have any damage to vehicles or anything like that. And then it's basically just based off of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So someone comes up with just a small amount of trash will not see a large increase. But, you know, also they have the Rutherford County Convenience Centers they could also utilize as part of the service that the county provides.
Now, I notice whenever you drive by there at night, there's a flame that's always going. What is that, methane? Mm-hmm. What is that? How does that work?
That's a flare that burns off the excess gas. So you will see that at night. A lot of times my kids will say, where's the flame during the day? But it's very noticeable at night, but that's what's going on.
So that's just burning off whatever excess gas mm-hmm. is there, and I guess that's caused by the trash mm-hmm. slowly, whatever the trash does.
It's just a process of the trash decomposing and things like that, and we just need to pull it out to make sure that we knock down a lot of the odors and things like that that could come from the landfill.
Now, I know one of the big issues, and this is another reason why to recycle, but one of the big issues there, the landfill actually has a lifespan, mm-hmm. and I guess all landfills do, but people may not realize that.
Yeah, it's Middle Point's down to about eight years of life, and a lot of the landfills in Middle Tennessee and Eastern Tennessee will eventually always come to a closure point at some point. So that's one of the things that we're out in the community talking about, trying to get recycling to the forefront. Because anything we can do, it doesn't matter if it's Middle Point or another landfill across the country, the more that we can pull out, the better off the environment's going to be in general.
Now, this could, I guess, eventually be a major problem all across the U.S. I mean, with cities growing like crazy, especially in the South, more people equals more trash, and then what are you going to do with it eventually?
Well, that's, you know, it's got to have an end use, but that's why we're really focusing on different avenues, and, you know, I'm really encouraged by the commissioners and the mayor here in Rutherford County that really have hit this head on trying to find sustainable solutions for all of this. But it's going to be an issue across the United States. You know, some parts of the country are a little more up to date with recycling than others. But that's why I've taken an active role in the community. I've been out and about different festivals and things like that to talk about recycling, because that's going to be a big part of it. There's just so much that goes in landfills that do not have to. And the more knowledge we can get out there, the better off everyone's going to be.
I know in nearby Wilson County, you know, they're putting together, I guess, a huge sludge production thing or something. I'm not sure what all is going on there, but they're doing a lot of different ideas. Are we doing a lot of thinking on what we can do here? I know you said that the county officials, the city officials are all working together to try to figure something out.
Yeah, they're going through different avenues, have set through different presentations of different alternative solutions. You know, we're really just here to offer any expertise we may have. We're not actively involved in any of that. We run all types of facilities across the country. You know, so when the time comes, if there's a viable solution out there, we can offer any expertise we may have on that.
Has the county or the city come to y'all and said, you know, y'all are the experts, tell us what we can do next?
They're in the process of monthly meetings and inviting different folks to come and talk about different solutions and possibilities we may have. And we will be doing that in the future at one of the upcoming meetings, kind of talking about what different things Republic could offer.
So what types of things is Republic actually doing elsewhere in the country?
We have, you know, state-of-the-art recycling facilities in Las Vegas, out in California, the newest is in Plano, Texas. So we're very active in recycling in different parts of the country, composting, a lot of different avenues.
So with the different types of recycling, the composting, is there an opportunity for, I don't know, additional revenue to come into the county through recycling?
Well, you know, the recycling market in general has been a little troubled in the last few months, with China stopping a lot of the distribution of these materials going to them. And that's why we're out and about talking to folks and making sure they recycle in the correct way.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're recycling in the correct way, the avenues for all this material to go to is really going to open up, and the contamination levels are going to come down, and we can have an avenue to disperse a lot of this. And when you do that, that's just only going to help keep cost and all that in line.
Again, Jeremy Jernigan with us today, the Middle Point Landfill General Manager. Now, I know in years past, recycling seemed to be kind of an irritant for people because you'd have to separate glass bottles with cans, with paper. I mean, you'd have to separate it all. You would sometimes, you know, at the time, if we had curbside pickup for recyclables, you'd have to put them out there separate as well. Is recycling easier today?
It can be. We have a website that I would encourage folks to go to, recyclingsimplified.com. That will lay out the do's and don'ts. But it is really as simple as 1, 2, 3. You know what you can throw away. Make sure it's empty, clean, and dry. And then never bag it. A lot of people will bag the recyclables. We encourage people to keep it free and open. Make sure it is clean, because if you leave that ketchup in that bottle, mm-hmm. it's going to contaminate. And then you could contaminate the entire load. And then know what to throw away and know what to recycle. A lot of folks just see different items and think it's recyclable, but it's really not. And then you run a course of maybe contaminating the load. You know, we were at Christmas. Mm-hmm. My kids opened up a lot of packages that had cardboard on the back and the plastic on the
yeah.
front. You know, pull that plastic off the front, throw that away, and then recycle your cardboard. Because if you throw that in together, it could possibly contaminate the entire load.
So what type of recycling is being done here in Rutherford County?
Rutherford County's convenience centers have the drop-off areas. I would encourage folks to use those. But also, you know, they should be marked of what they can take. Just make sure you abide by the rules. Take what they can take. If they don't take it, make sure that doesn't get put into recycling. Make sure that goes to the trash. That way you do not contaminate that recycle load, and it ends up at his end use and gets recycled.
Of course, cardboard is one of the big things that the convenience centers take. I know they have usually a huge dumpster specifically for cardboard. Mm-hmm. What is done with the cardboard when it's dropped off at the landfill, or is it taken elsewhere?
Any material that is deemed recyclable there and is not contaminated will be hauled to one of the local recycle facilities. I believe Rutherford County dumps a lot of theirs in Laverne and Nashville. So that's where the end use will ultimately be.
How in the world do you figure out if something is contaminated when it comes in? Because, I mean, you're talking about a great big load of stuff.
Well, you know, that's why it's important for the folks out there that take an effort to recycle to make sure they do it correctly. Mm-hmm. I was at a local event not too long ago and was playing a little game where I had five or six items laid out. And you'll be surprised the amount of folks that, I don't want to say pass or failed, mm-hmm. But it was an eye-opener to several of them that they thought something was recyclable, but it really wasn't. So that's what's key, is to try to make sure people are educated, because the last thing anybody wants to do is take the time to recycle, and then ultimately it may not end up being recycled because they didn't do it the correct way.
What about glass bottles? Are those still something that can easily be recycled here locally?
You know, glass is one of the real tough items right now. I would encourage anyone out there that recycles or pays for a third party to recycle, be sure to check with that facility to make sure they do accept glass. Because a lot of them will not, and a lot of folks think they will, then they end up putting their glass in the recycled material, and then it ends up messing it up. So I really encourage folks, wherever you drop your recyclables off, make sure that glass is acceptable. Or if you pay a third-party company, call that company and make sure, hey, do you take glass?
You know, you go to other countries, and they are big on recycling glass, especially, you know, the soda bottles. Yeah. And whenever you buy a drink at, you know, some little market in another country, you'll have to pay an extra 10 cents, whatever it may be. And then if you bring that empty bottle back, you get your 10 cents back. But we don't do that a lot here.
No, we don't. I believe there's still some states that will do, deposits.
Mm-hmm.
I think Iowa still does it. Some of the northern states will still do it. We don't do anything like that here. You know, I take a trip every year down to El Salvador. And it's pretty much the same thing there. Not so much for the recyclable aspect of it, but, you know, if you buy a drink on the street, you drink it there, then you leave the bottle.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is a big problem out there.
And people, though, in those other countries, they're used to doing that, mm-hmm. you know, and we're not used to doing that here. So how in the world do you get people to start doing that if your state's not even suggesting to it?
Yeah. It you're going to hear me say it. It comes down to education. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I'm doing out and about, doing things like this morning. Republic has actually come up with a curriculum for the school system to try to get the kids young, so to speak, mm-hmm. and start changing their mindset. You know, I've got a 4-year-old at home, a 17-year-old, and a 13-year-old. They focus on those things where me and my wife may not. So yeah. If we can start educating kids at a younger age, it's going to take a few years, but we can start to get ahead of this over time.
So obviously it can happen. It just takes a lot of time and a lot of education. And is this new recyclable program, is it in our school system here yet?
No, it's something that's just rolled out. We will be talking to local individuals to see if it's an opportunity to possibly get it out there. But it's relatively new, but it's going to be a really good program to get out and about if at all possible.
You know, we've talked a lot about, and you hear a lot about, the landfill closing. Let's say it has a lifespan of 8 years, like you were saying. What happens after that 8-year mark? Because I understand it still has to be monitored for years and years.
Yeah, there'll be, you know, some sites fall under a 30-year monitoring plan. Some sites fall under a 50-year. So regardless of if the landfill closes in 8 years or not, Republic will be part of this community for many years to come to make sure that it's identified and monitored in a correct way.
So will that mean there's still some type of office out there where somebody is on site, or is it something that's just checked up on from year to year?
They'll ultimately end up being someone on site. It will not be just a complete walk away. We'll still have our local presence here with the hauling company and different avenues around those. So there'll still be someone on site on a daily basis.
So 20, 30 years from now, can that land be used for anything?
Not so much the landfill itself, but we are currently working with Middle Tennessee State University to find different avenues for the property that we have around there to investigate, have different ideas of what that property could be used for. We're actually meeting with them, I believe, the second week of January. They are going to present some ideas of what we might do with the property around there to make it a benefit for the community. So I'm eager to see what they come up with, that we might be able to partner with them and make the property around the landfill some sort of community access point, trails, different things like that.
I know the Gateway Island, which is part of the Greenway system here in town over there around Medical Center Parkway, that was once a landfill, I guess, years and years and years ago, which is also why you see those large, what is it, those vents that are coming out of the ground near that Gateway Island. So that's, I guess, something that could be done years down the road, a park of some sort.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we've kind of looked at with the property around the landfill. So we'll be interested to see what MTSU comes up with that we might be able to partner with. But I was not aware of that you're speaking of until someone was talking about it the other day, because I guess they built the fire department right over there by it. And so I was not even aware that was there until it came up in a conversation the other day.
Yeah, I would say most people who are not from here, or either many who are from here even, they don't realize that. But that's pretty neat for sure. Jeremy Jernigan with us today. He is the Middle Point Landfill General Manager here in Rutherford County. And, of course, the landfill itself is out there in the Walter Hill area, just along the Stones River. And you can see it from a pretty good distance away. I don't know, has it always been as high as it is, you know, the great big hilltop there?
Mm-hmm. Well, it hasn't always been that high, but it's had its current elevation for probably the last couple years. I left in 2014 and then came back a few months ago. So it's obviously gotten a little larger, but height-wise, it's been pretty consistent there for a little bit.
Is it one of the highest points in Rutherford County? I know Walter Hill, I think Walter Hill sits up higher than Murfreesboro.
I can't speak specifically to it if it is the highest point. I would imagine it's top two or three.
Yeah, that definitely so. Yeah. So what else can people do in order to start recycling better? I mean, other than just educating themselves, figuring out how to go about separating things, what else can they do?
I would encourage everyone to go to the website that I mentioned earlier, the recyclingsimplified.com. It will lay out really everything you can recycle and everything that you can't recycle. You know, if you look at the holidays right now, we have a naughty and nice list in regards to what you can recycle and what you can't. Some of that information will be on there, because again, a lot of folks just think a lot of different things are recyclable, but they're not. You know, if your child's got that plastic toy that just got replaced with a new plastic toy, a lot of folks think that will be recyclable. It's really not. So we encourage folks to drop that off somewhere else, give it to a child that may not have something. So don't just start throwing those plastic toys away. Make sure that we reuse them, give them out, and keep them out of the recyclable material.
And again, the uptick in extra trash for each household, about 25% come Christmas time. So that's a lot of extra waste that comes into the landfill. You know, back in the older days, I know people used to burn a lot of trash in their backyard. You don't hear a lot about that anymore.
You really don't. You know, a lot of the counties have done a really good job with the convenience centers and different avenues out there to keep folks from doing that. I certainly can remember a time growing up in Coffee County where they had a lot of convenience centers scattered out, and they just ended up being a really unclean area.
Yeah.
But years and years ago, Coffee County went to the convenience centers, and that really helped clean up the county and keep the stuff off the streets and roads.
And, of course, when people are burning trash, they're burning plastic, they're burning rubber, so it's just contaminating the air. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a no-win. You either contaminate the air, you contaminate the water supply. I mean, you got to be really careful when it comes to disposing trash.
You do. And again, I would just encourage everybody that's interested in recycling, interested in keeping things out, do your homework, make sure you do it the correct way, and the more people that we can get to doing it the correct way, the better off we're all going to be in the years to come.
Again, Jeremy Jernigan has been our guest this morning with the Middle Point Landfill. He is the general manager out there, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Time right now, 8:30. You're tuned in to WGNS. Local news and more coming up just around the corner.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. Don't let your pet be chilly this winter. We have sweaters and beds to keep your dog and cat warm. We also have supplemental heat to keep your bird, small animal, and reptile cozy throughout these chilly months. Let Animal City put our 29 years experience to work for you and your pets. This is Amanda from Animal City. I'm inviting your family to come do business with my family. You can find us at 919 Northwest Broad Street right here in Murfreesboro.
One of our biggest items on the menu has always been our soup at Demas's. The problem that we have had is that people have to wait in long lines when you're not feeling really good to get a soup. So we have created something that we call Soup Express. And it's different kiosks that we have with a separate line to be able to pick up soup, pay for it with a credit card, and take it home right away. The Soup Express is only for our quarts of soup or above, and with no other types of food. Nothing else is just when you want soup, and that's why we call it Soup Express. It's only at Demas's restaurants.
This is Jeff Graham with Tire World. I want to invite you to visit our new off-road department at our Memorial Boulevard location, featuring lift kits, leveling kits, light bars, as well as wheel and tire packages. Just come by and ask for Gator for all your off-road needs. That's Tire World on Memorial Boulevard.
Good morning. Traffic still holding up out here right now. As far as interstate accidents, delays on 24 as you head towards Nashville and even towards Bonnie Eagle Mountain. Looks good. Some radar out here, though. Nonetheless, you're going to see a lot of that over the next 4 or 5 days. Prince's Hot Chicken is the original hot chicken in Middle Tennessee. Check it out, 5814 Nolensville Pike. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
We'll see cloudy skies here this afternoon with a high in the mid-60s. South winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a low near 48. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 53.
If you're not waking up to the wake-up crew, here's what you've been missing.
Brian doesn't have a belly anymore. Still got a bad head. No, I'm kidding.
The wake-up crew with John, Brian, and Dalton. Weekday mornings from 6 until 7:50 here on News Radio WGNS.
Experience real hometown banking. I'm Shelly Rigsby, manager of First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We're at 2230 Mercury Boulevard. We are a local community bank. We offer a personal one-on-one experience with each of our customers that you will not be able to get with the larger institutions. Come see us at the Bank Murfreesboro Calls First. First National Bank of Murfreesboro, Mercury Boulevard, member FDIC.
We're News Radio WGNS, 100.5, 101.9, 1450, online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com. From the WGNSradio.com News Center, a local news update with Ron Jordan.
The law offices of John Day will be offering safe rides home once again this year in Rutherford County. Using the code JohnDayNYE, partygoers will have the opportunity to receive a free Uber ride home up to $25 within a 5-mile radius of Murfreesboro from Tuesday, December 31st at 11 p.m. to Wednesday, January 1st at 2 a.m. Rutherford County Assessor of Property Rob Mitchell recently received the Foundations of Leadership Certificate through the NAFI Center for Effective Leadership and Agency of the UT Institute for Public Service. The Foundations to Leadership Certificate provides techniques that will improve employee performance and lead change throughout an organization. It's been quite a year for the Middle Tennessee State University Master of Science and Professional Science program. One new concentration, Fermentation Science, was added to the mix, joining Actuarial Sciences, Biostatistics, Biotechnology, Engineering Management, Geosciences, and Healthcare Informatics as areas of pursuit. In August, MSPS celebrated its largest graduating group to date as 46 students completed internships with companies and institutions and 82 for all of 2019. The flu vaccine now being offered at no charge to patients at Tennessee's county health department clinics, including Rutherford County, as long as supplies last. Seasonal influenza is now widespread across Tennessee, but it's not too late to get that flu shot. And remember, after getting the vaccine, it's still important to wash your hands with soapy water or use alcohol-based hand sanitizers and cover coughs and sneezes with a sleeve or tissue to help prevent the spread of the illness. People who are sick should stay home to recover and to prevent spreading the illness to coworkers, friends, and others. I'm Ron Jordan, News Radio WGNS.
News is brought to you by the Billups Center, medicine that matters to men. Online at thebillupscenter.com.
The Action Line on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
Phil, you're over there talking, and the mic was off. I don't know what you were saying.
Didn't matter.
Okay, doesn't matter. Tara Stone with us today, and you are the new director for the Red Cross Heart of Tennessee chapter. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I am good. So how long have you been in this new position here?
Rounding out my second week.
Okay. So, second week, you know it all now.
Right. Exactly.
How is that going so far?
It's going well so far. I've been very welcomed by our board of directors and appreciate that. And just looking forward to really jumping in after the holidays.
And Phil Barnett with us as well, and he is on that board of directors for the Red Cross. And the Heart of Tennessee chapter of the Red Cross, they serve several other communities outside of Rutherford County as well, I believe. I don't know how many counties and everything they serve.
17 counties.
17, wow. And that is not only with blood services, that is with, I guess, disasters as well. So there is a lot to the Red Cross.
There is. I think there's a lot that people don't realize with our disaster response and our service to the armed forces, which reaches all those counties, and a lot of work with preparing people for home disasters and safety, and lots of training courses available as well.
Now, with, you know, for the armed services and all of that, you're talking about like when there's a death in the family, somebody calls the Red Cross then gets a hold of whoever the commander is on the post. They let that soldier know, hey, you know, a grandmother died, a mother died, whatever the case may be. And then they make arrangements for that soldier to come home, or I guess they work with the military to make those arrangements.
That's correct. It's a way to verify the information, kind of be that in between with the family, the military, to help make that happen and get them home in a readily fashion.
You know, and that is something that the Red Cross has been a part of for, I don't know, maybe 100 years now. I mean, a long time for sure.
That's how the Red Cross started, was on the battlefield.
Born on the battlefield.
Yes. That's pretty wild. And, you know, you still see those old ads that the Red Cross once had, probably in the 20s or so, where you would see, look like a nurse wearing a Red Cross hat. And they would actually be out there on the battlefield then. And, of course, it's not exactly like that now, but it's interesting to look back in history and understand more about the Red Cross.
That's right. And it was born on the battlefield. And in 2018, the Red Cross provided more than 325,000 emergency communication services to 88,000 military families.
Wow.
That's a large number.
You know, I remember my first day on the Red Cross board was actually on 9/11, so my first board meeting was scheduled to be on 9/11. So I remember after everything happened, walking in there, and it was a madhouse, of course, because you had people all over the community contacting the Red Cross and even stopping by asking how they can volunteer. Then you had people who are already trained to volunteer getting ready to go to different places to help out after 9/11. But, you know, the Red Cross locally, they not only help those 17 communities you're talking about, but they'll also go to disaster sites elsewhere when needed, just like when 9/11 occurred.
That's right. I don't know if people realize how many volunteers it takes to support the Red Cross. And the volunteers are going through lots of training all throughout the year to be ready when those times come. And they do deploy all throughout. And whether it's, you know, a flooding incident or any other kind of disaster, and we do have a lot of people in our chapter that are always ready to go and help out when needed. And it's wonderful to see their dedication and the many, many hours of commitment they've given.
Again, Tara Stone with us this morning, the new director of the Red Cross here in Rutherford County, the Heart of Tennessee chapter. So what made you want to go, I guess, this route, helping the Red Cross?
I've had several years in, I guess you could say, in the nonprofit. Started with Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development, supporting the community in a different way. Always have enjoyed helping people. Worked in real estate for a while, which is different, but really felt that fulfillment of, you know, making the dream of home ownership come true, and had the opportunity to start. Actually, in May, I started a part-time position at the Red Cross, working as business operations and more of a inside facility type job, and got to learn more about the Red Cross. And when the opportunity arose for the executive director position, I thought, well, I'll, you know, jump in there and see how that works out. But really enjoy supporting our community. Lived here for a long time, went to Middle Tennessee State University, and just really get that fulfillment of being able to help in so many different ways.
What kind of, walk-in business does the Red Cross receive? Because you also have blood services there. You can donate blood there in the office certain days of the week. But what kind of walk-ins do you see there?
You know, we don't have a lot of general walk-ins. We do have the donor center, which is wonderful. I love having donor center at our location. It really gives us a face to the community on a regular basis. They are open 6 days a week, closed on Wednesday. We get a lot more phone calls, people looking for different help and services. Sometimes we aren't able to assist them, but we do work really hard to connect them with the services that can. We have a lot of people calling for smoke alarm installations. I think that's something sometimes people don't realize that we do on a regular basis. It's part of just making households safer. So people calling for those services as well.
Classes, CPR being one of the big ones there. A lot of people go through the Red Cross to get CPR certified. I know at one point there were even places here in town, and it may still be true, that they required some of their employees to actually be CPR certified, but that's something you guys do there.
We do, and we are very fortunate to have a large room that our training services department can use on a regular basis. We have classes that do come in there all the time. Recently had a company that had 3 days of classes. I think it's very important for their employees, and they recognize that, and so sent them in small groups over 3 days to do CPR training.
YMCA, whenever we had one in Murfreesboro, that was one of the big ones that, you know, all their employees, all their trainers there, they were required to go through Red Cross classes, and they probably did classes at the Y even for, or, you know, Red Cross classes there at the Y for CPR. But these are things that can save people's lives.
They are. We also have something, you know, a lot of younger kids babysit. We have babysitter classes that teach those skills, I think, that are very important for the youth. And we have a variety of online and in-classroom blended classes. So you can do some part of that studying online and then come in for the hands-on training. So it kind of helps to make a variance in, you know, a longer class, a shorter class, and help people have options.
Now, what about the disaster assistance team? You know, whenever there is a disaster, such as a large-scale fire, maybe in neighboring Woodbury, do you still need volunteers for that?
We're always looking for volunteers. With the Red Cross and disaster services, you know, anything can happen 24/7. You never know when things like that are going to come up. And so to have more people that can respond to those is always good. And you never know the level of something that will happen either here in our community or somewhere else. So the more people that we can have prepared and ready to serve, the better, you know, we will be and more prepared we'll be.
You know, I want to go back to the whole the military thing, you know, contacting families and whatnot, because this time of year, the holidays really are the time where a lot of military personnel do have that extra time off, and they ask for the time off to come home. But also, it seems like this is also the time of year where there are more deaths in families. It's almost like certain people, they try to hold on just a little bit longer. But by the time that military personnel gets back to their base, they learn that maybe grandmother passed away. But Phil, these are things that Red Cross helps out with. I know we were saying at the beginning of the show here, but you were in the military. How does that actually work?
It works amazingly well. As a past commanding officer, I can tell you when a message comes in from the Red Cross, it's 100% true. You don't take time to question it because you know the vetting process they've gone through to verify the illness, to verify with the doctor, to verify with the hospital, in the event of someone passing away, verify with the funeral home, verify the arrangements. They've crossed every T and dotted every I. So when that message comes in, you don't go, okay, let's look into this. You immediately, if you can spare the individual, you immediately send that individual home so they can be with their family. And oftentimes, their home, it may only be hours before, but they'll oftentimes get home before someone passes away. It's also sometimes when somebody's ill. It can be somebody with a difficult pregnancy. There can be any number of reasons why it's medically warranted to have the service member back home with the rest of the family.
You know, it's wild because I don't think people realize it's not just for that death. I mean, it's sometimes in order, like you were saying, get home before the death happens.
Well, I mean that's what you would prefer that happens so they can be with family you know, not just at the memorial part of it, at the saddest part of it. And a lot of times that's the individual. Sometimes it's a young military person who has actually lived with their grandparents. So, I mean, the grandparents in their early years were their parents. And in that case, it's really important that we get them back home.
In cases like that, I would imagine that whoever, you know, is in charge of that personnel, that troop, or whatnot, sometimes they are the person who tells them the first of the news that, you know, hey, somebody's sick, you need to get home, when they didn't even realize it.
Well, when I first went in the military, that was true. Today, even every junior military person has a cell phone.
Yeah.
So there's not as much surprise in it. But yeah, if you get that message, the chances are it'll be a senior person, either an officer or an enlisted senior person, and it'll be one of the chaplains assigned to your command, and they'll be the ones that'll go down or ask the individual to come up to the office where they can be a little more private and talk to them. A lot of times it's the young military person or the military person who then comes to the command and says, and I mean, based on their character, based on their reliability, you don't even wait for the message to come in, but you know the message will come in and it will verify exactly what they said.
I guess some of the more difficult cases would be when somebody is overseas and they're in some type of war zone. That would be really tough.
Well, in all cases, it's at the discretion of the commanding officer. I mean, I think every commanding officer would like to get their individuals back for a family event that's this serious. But there are times, I mean, the greatest example in the world is if you happen to be on a submarine, that submarine is not going to pop up in the water and let the whole world know where it is if it's in the middle of some difficult maneuver. And so sometimes the needs of the military make it impossible to get the individual back.
Yeah, and those are situations that I guess people, they don't think about. I mean, the average person wouldn't think about, you know, we can't get him back right now. He's underwater.
Well, I mean, when you go in an overseas assignment or you go on a ship or are assigned to a squadron, chances are the last time you were home, everybody was healthy, and you don't think about it. I mean, you don't think about a 28-year-old brother having some kind of hospitalization or worse yet, a death that you have to respond to now. So, I mean, it's difficult no matter how it happens. Thanks to the Red Cross, it's made a whole lot easier because a commanding officer can focus on his individual member of his command and not on, I wonder if this is true.
Again, Phil Barnett with us. He is part of the board of directors for the Red Cross. And then also with us, Tara Stone, the new director for the Red Cross Heart of Tennessee chapter. If somebody listening wants to get more involved with the Red Cross, is it as easy as just calling?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They can give us a call. Our main number is 615-893-4272. You can also go online and find descriptions of different volunteer opportunities. If they want to give us a call, we can just direct them towards that and find out what works best for them, their skill set, time commitment, things that they want to do.
So, Tara, as we head into the new year, what are some things that the local Red Cross will be working on in 2020?
Appreciate you asking that. We have a blood drive coming up. I just want to go ahead and mention that. Thursday, January the 2nd, at the Gold's Gym in Smyrna, the group exercise room from 1 to 5 p.m. You can schedule an appointment ahead of time, redcrossblood.org, or call 1-800-RED-CROSS. Walk-ins are always welcome, and they will be giving out a Red Cross long-sleeve T-shirt while those supplies last, and appreciate you all sharing that information already on your Facebook page and other avenues. Also, I mentioned that our disaster services does do a lot of prevention, safety awareness, and they go into homes and install smoke alarms, change batteries, just educate families on having a safety plan. And they will be going out to do our national drive, say Sound the Alarm drive, will be April the 18th in Warren County. We'll be going out in Warren County. We'll be looking for volunteers and partners for that coming up soon. But you can always schedule an appointment for them to come out and install. Also on February 22nd, they'll be doing an installation in DeKalb County with the DeKalb County Volunteer Fire Department. They'll be going out and canvassing areas. But again, you can also schedule an appointment for that.
And smoke alarms are so important, and they're so cheap. And the new smoke alarms that we give out have a 10-year battery. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to worry about the change in time every year. And remember, that's when you go in and change the 9-volt battery in them. They're good for 10 years. But a lot of the homes, last year we did a huge campaign in Smyrna. And a lot of the homes we went into either had no smoke alarms, they had the bare wires still hanging from the ceiling where the smoke alarm had made a noise once, they beat it to death with a broom and never bothered to replace it. Or they might have one in a 2 or 3 bedroom house that, you know, is maybe installed in the kitchen where it's not supposed to be, and doing very little good to alert anybody that's in one of the bedrooms. So, I mean, it's really important that every house have a number of smoke alarms so that if you do have a fire, you can get out. I think one of the things that when I first became of all the things the Red Cross did surprised me. You think of disaster action teams and you think of hurricanes, you think of tornadoes, you think of large scale events that affect dozens of people, and we do dispatch teams that go to that. One of the tricky interview questions that we asked Tara was you will be prepared to deploy. Because sometime in the next 12 months, when you have us on again next December, I can guarantee you, Tara will have spent 2 weeks or 2 months away from her family and will be responsible for one of the centers wherever that disaster may be. But locally, the biggest disaster we have is fires.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, they're single home fires, but it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and mom and dad and the three kids are standing out on the driveway in their pajamas with really no idea what's next. And that's where the Red Cross steps in and provides that cushion until they've had a chance to kind of clear their head and go, okay, we've got insurance on the house. We can move over to grandma's house for 2 weeks till we figure out if we're going to rent an apartment or how long this is going to change. Take to get our house back to where it needs to be, or, you know, and so the Red Cross is the buffer. I think one of the coolest things, one of the more emotional things that I've seen done is we actually have little teddy bears. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the young child is ripped out of the home and hasn't had a chance to get anything but the pajamas on his back, and the Red Cross is there to give him just a little tiny token that he can hang on to until his life gets back to normal. So a lot of those, I think one of the other things that was interesting, you think about service to the armed forces and you think about the active duty people that are involved with service to the armed forces. It's also there for the retired folks. And what happens with the retired folks, and you may remember, I think it was like 3 winters ago when it was brutally cold up on the plateau. And some of those folks were living in single-wide trailers that were jacked up 4 feet off the ground. And those trailers had a quarter of an eighth of an inch of insulation. And they live on very, very tight budgets. And all of a sudden, instead of $56 a month for electric, they had $300 a month for electric. And then they had gotten 2 or 3 months behind, and now the electric company was threatening to turn off their power unless they came up with $900, which was impossible. And they can come through service to the armed forces in the Red Cross. We don't lend money, we don't give money to people, but what we do is we serve as a conduit to get them to Navy Marine Corps relief, Army relief, Marine Corps relief, Air Force relief, so that they can get into an arrangement with those organizations that say, okay, we're going to lend you the $900 and we're going to expect you to pay us $50 a month forever, but we're at least going to make sure that you still have the electricity in your house. And so a lot of times it's local folks who are having you know, more of a financial internal crisis than it is their house was blown over, their house caught fire.
I guess it all boils down to relationships, just like anything else. And Tara, you'll have lots of new relationships with a lot of nonprofits, obviously, and those will help to link those who are victims of different types of disaster, link them to services.
You're correct, and we're fortunate to have a lot of entities here, you know, in our community that look to support people, and we do reach out to each other and help connect people to the different support that they need to, you know, help the situation that they're in at the time.
You know, as we close out this morning, I know you mentioned the upcoming blood drives, but that is one of the really big things that Red Cross is involved in, and that is blood collections and working with hospitals all around the country to make sure that that life-saving supply of blood is available for anybody who may need it when they need it.
That's right. The Red Cross collects, processes, and distributes about 40% of the nation's blood supply. So about each day, the Red Cross needs to collect about 13,000 blood donations to meet the needs of patients. There's always a need. We always appreciate the people that come into our donor center. You see the same faces coming on a regular basis and really appreciate their commitment to what that does. And also those that come in to give platelets, they have a short shelf life, but help those that may be going through a cancer treatment, something of that nature, come in and give on a regular basis as well. And we can do that at our donor center here in Murfreesboro.
You know, I don't know that you can fully appreciate blood donation until actually you receive blood, a blood transfusion, or a family member does, or until maybe you go to a foreign country where the hospital says you got to go get your own blood donation and have it brought back to us if you want, you know, your wife, your son to live, because they need a blood transfusion. And it's really like that in some of these other countries, you know.
One of the coolest things we can offer, and I'll show it to all of your listeners.
Oh, good. Show us a picture.
Yeah, I'll show you a picture.
There you go.
But one of the coolest things you can do is take your smartphone and go to your app store, and it costs nothing, but get the Red Cross blood donor app, and it'll pop up on your screen, and you can schedule your appointments locally. If you want to go up to Smyrna, you can see when the next Smyrna drive will be, where it's going to be held. It automatically told me you have to wait 56 days in between donations. And so it's already told me that Thursday, January the 23rd, at the blood center at 10:30 in the morning, I have my next appointment. And so I'll show up there. It'll be a pleasant visit. They always have cookies. They always have juice. Don't get up too quickly. And when you're done, every unit of blood could be as much as three people's lives that you save. I mean, it's so easy to give it. There are no side effects to giving it. Most recently, yay, MTSU. Mm-hmm. Once again, we had the battle of the blood with Western Kentucky University, and they came in a very admirable number two behind MTSU. So thank everybody at MTSU. But I mean, it's just an incredibly smooth operation once a year over there when we have a massive blood drive and the students come in. Then you can make appointments, but I think they come in by the droves as walk-ins. And so we had a huge blood drive there. But blood is so important when you need it. And it's also an easy thing for you to give that will help others. So please look it up today. Go to your app store and get the Red Cross blood app. Set up your first appointment either at the blood center here in Murfreesboro or something that may be more convenient to where you work or where you play, and start giving blood.
Again, we've been talking about the Red Cross, the Heart of Tennessee chapter, and the new director here in Rutherford County is Tara Stone. Phil Barnett also with us this morning. Thank you both for joining us. And where is the local office? I know we only have about 30 seconds left, but where is that office?
Located at 501 Memorial Boulevard in Murfreesboro.
Okay, and that's next door to what used to be Ruby Tuesdays in the
Correct.
Past. I don't know what it is now.
It's an iVision Center of some sort.
It's at the foot of Bridge Over Broad.
That's right, the great big bridge. That's perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Time right now, 9 o'clock. Local news comes your way next.
The Action Line on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.